You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. Each Monday at 11 a.m., this show brings you answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. Now, my co-host, Dr. Melody Fox, is unable to be with us today, but I look forward to her return next week. In the meantime, this show will continue to address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. And we will introduce you to specialized schools, programs, and dynamic authors that can help you and your family find greater peace, satisfaction in home life and in career. Now, with over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in these areas of expertise who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, in today's show, we're going to explore what it means for teens to approach their future career as a calling, not a Pollyanna pie-in-the-sky sense, but as a realistic, achievable goal, accessible almost to anyone. Our guests are professors and international experts in career development and authors of the book, Make Your Job a Calling, How the Psychology of Vocation Can Change Your Life at Work. Now, they have collaborated for, I guess, about the last 7 years on scientific research aimed at understanding what it means to approach work as a calling and have learned that doing so can have a transformative effect on how people experience their jobs. Now, there are important lessons from their work, from how teens can navigate their career development process and how parents, educators, and counselors can help. Now, with us, Dr. Brian Dick is an associate professor of psychology at Colorado State University and co-founder and chief science officer of Career Analytics Network. He's also the creator of Jobsology, a new online career assessment and job matching portal. And he serves on the editorial boards of six research journals, including the Journal of Counseling Psychology, the Journal of Vocational Behavior, and the Journal of Career Assessment. Brian is the recipient of the 2010 Early Career Professional Award from the Society of Vocational Psychology and is co-editor of two other books, The Psychology of Religion in the Workplace and Purpose and Meaning in the Workplace. With us is also Dr. Ryan Duffy, and he is assistant professor of psychology at the University of Florida. Ryan's research is primarily in the area of vocational psychology and positive psychology. Ryan has focused on job satisfaction, well-being, work values, and the interface of spirituality and work. He serves on the editorial boards of the Journal of Career Assessment and the Journal of Counseling Psychology. Brian and Ryan, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thanks for having us, Alan.
Well, I'm glad to have you on. In fact, as I was reading the book, I was thinking, if both of my sons weren't in school today, I would have wanted to have them in here with me as my substitute co-host, because I really like the things that you guys are touching on. And I just think that especially now, the way that our economy is, the way that I'm hearing from so many college students that are saying, you know, I'm not sure what it is I want to be taking, and whatever it is that I am taking, I'm not sure that I have a career in it when I get done. So I think the timing of the book is also really excellent.
Thank you. We agree. It seems to be striking a chord with people.
Well, let me jump right in, and I want to add to anybody that is listening right now, and again, if you're listening and you're not driving, if you're on your computer, you can go to www.makeyourjobacalling.com, and you can see some of the things that we're talking about. So, for instance, I mean, when we're talking about, you know, some of the tools that they offer or some of the surveys that you can take, you can go right to their website and you can see that. So this is something you can do. This makes this very interactive. So anyway, with that said, in your book, you know, the, you know, Making Your Job a Calling, you talk about how people approach their work in different ways and that those differences, you know, as far as they really matter in terms of how they experience their jobs. So tell us a little bit more about this.
Well, Alan, you know, work means a lot of different things for different people. For some people, work is a way to pass the time, a way to make a living, not a whole lot beyond that. For that group, it's a matter of punching in, punching out, meeting the minimum criteria, and going home. For other people, work takes on a sense of, I guess it becomes a method of gaining power, prestige, and wealth. It creates a kind of status ladder that people can climb. There's almost an addition to achieving, to getting the next promotion, and so forth. Calling is a little bit different than either of those two approaches in that it provides a way for a person to use her or his gifts in a meaningful, kind of purpose-driven approach to advancing the common good, to making life better for people directly or indirectly. And over the last 5 years in particular, researchers have started to measure these different approaches to understanding work, and they've found that when people approach work as a calling, especially compared to the other two approaches, they're more likely to talk about having a lot of benefits, job satisfaction, and confidence with their ability to make good career decisions, but also just general well-being, satisfaction with life. It has a way of making life richer for people.
Well, now give us some examples, because I know that, and in fact, I've in a book that I'm included in, and I put in there that at the time in which I was working a particular case as a young investigator, I realized that this was my calling, but I also recognized the fact that, I mean, everybody's calling doesn't necessarily have to be something that some of us would perceive as giving back or doing something for others. So give us some other examples of something to where somebody grasped it and realizes that this is their calling.
Sure. Well, here's a story I like to tell a lot. In fact, we start the book off with this story. A few years ago, a student of mine came in my office and said, I got to tell you what happened to my husband yesterday. And her husband was driving visit his dad and going through Mountain Pass in Colorado. It was a very windy road, and the road was closed off. One of the two lanes was closed off because there was construction happening. And as you know, when that happens, there's somebody in the role of flagger, right? So there's a guy with a hard hat standing at the front of the coned off area, and he's got the sign that says stop on one side and slow on the other. And this is somebody you encounter a lot, and if you're like me, you've wondered what that's like and how that can be something that a person can stand. But the student of mine, her husband, gets stuck right near the front of, you know, right after the guy flips the sign from slow to stop. And he's sitting there, the window's open, it's a nice day, and another motorist asks him, how can you stand this job? And the guy says, as a road construction flagger, he says, he perks with enthusiasm, he sort of lights up, and he says, I love this job because I'm keeping you safe, you and everyone and all the cars behind you. And I care a lot about the guys behind me, and I keep them safe. I am grateful for the opportunity to do this job day in and day out because I make a meaningful, a tangible difference. And when Ryan and I heard this story, we thought, man, this is exactly the kind of thing that gets us excited because this is a road construction flagger. It's not somebody who's a physician or a teacher or a social worker, you know, in these jobs where you can see how someone is making a clear and significant difference in other people's lives every day. It's somebody who's doing something that for many of us would seem mind-numbing, but he's able to identify the purpose that plays, and it matters to him. And so knowing that and reflecting on that clearly brought a lot of meaning to the work that he did, and he probably did a very good job.
Now, how much of this is just a personality trait? Because, I mean, I think there's a personality trait out there for somebody that looks at every situation that they're in and says, I'm going to be the best at this, whatever it is. If I'm washing dishes, I'm going to be the best dishwasher. And if I'm roofing a roof, I'm going to be the best roofer. How much of this is something that we as parents or people that have influence over other young people are something that we can give them that they're going to carry into many parts of their life, not just their career?
You know, I'll take that. I think it certainly is a trait. I don't know if it's a personality trait, I would say, but more of a motivational trait. And I think you're right, Alan, is that if someone can have that as a motivational trait throughout everything they approach, both school and work and otherwise, I do think they'll be more prone to developing a calling over time in whatever job they have. You know, one of the things that we talk a lot about in the book is that the notion that you find this calling and then embark on a 50-year career in that one job is actually kind of rare. Uh-huh. That more often people find themselves in jobs, and if they have that motivation to make it a better job for them, over time that job will evolve into something that is more meaningful and pro-social, but not always right out of the gate. And so I think, especially for teens, one of the things that we like to talk about is the idea of having that larger motivational approach that will go your whole life and not just assuming that it's just one big decision when you're 18 years old.
Right. Now, I mean, you know, so how would you help a teenager, somebody who's in high school right now, and they're just starting to begin to identify a calling, you know, how would you instruct them, or how would you help them to sort of chart out that career path, you know, as they're obviously making other decisions that include college or trade school or whatever?
Yeah, you know, I work with Brian and I work with a lot of college students who are at that place too. And our big thing for anyone, whatever age you are, is really about self-knowledge. And what we mean by that is having a real, true, honest understanding of the things you're good at, that you like to do, and the types of environments that work for your personality. I think a lot of times when we think about making career decisions, we focus on maybe things like money or prestige, but those necessarily don't always align with the things we're interested in and are good at. Mm-hmm. And so for us, the first step for teenagers is really doing a good assessment of what those things are. I think sometimes we know what those are, but a lot of times we don't. And in our field, we have a lot of great tools, and on the website as well, to give you a good assessment of what those are for you, so you can know what general areas of work might be the place for you to find that calling.
Now, okay, so you mentioned identifying and exploring these things that are interests or values, or, you know, abilities. You know, do these things, you know, remain stable, you know, or would you expect them to change a lot, as obviously these things happen a lot with teenagers as they enter adulthood?
I'll take that. You know, the best evidence suggests that these traits, like what you're describing, interest, personality, are pretty stable on average, but they become increasingly stable as a kid makes his or her way through adolescence and into early adulthood. For teenagers, because these things are generally stable, but they do fluctuate a little bit, just to add to what Ryan said before, we encourage exploration. So it's self-knowledge, absolutely, but it's also try out a lot of, I mean, part of building self-knowledge is trying out a lot of different things, seeing kind of what you enjoy. It's good if you find yourself as a teen drawn to one particular area to explore that deeply. You know, talk to people who do work in that area. Get a clear sense of what life is like if you pursue that path. But we also encourage well-roundedness. So that a kid doesn't foreclose or get too locked into one career path, like I want to be a physician. and then find themselves as a sophomore in college really struggling with organic chemistry, and then being stuck thinking, well, I didn't really consider anything else. Now what? Striving for well-roundedness gives people kind of a broad idea of the range of things they could be successful in. And so that's kind of a status quo advice we give teenagers.
Well, as a father of teenagers right now, what I'm seeing is that, you know, when I was in high school and as I'm starting to make decisions in regards to college, I didn't really know what it was that I wanted to do. But I also, you know, went through a phase of not really paying enough attention to the grades and everything else at an early enough stage. And what I'm seeing now is that it seems to be so difficult to get into the schools that tailor towards a particular career, that it's almost as if kids are sort of being forced to make a decision earlier than maybe they really can. Have you recognized this?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in my working, especially with high school students and freshmen in college, there is such a strong push to foreclose on what you're going to do with your career, because there's so much pressure to get that internship, to get in that right class, to basically get on that path that when you apply for graduate school, medical school, or want to get a job as an accountant, you have this awesome resume that you've built up, but you've only been like 19 and 20 years old. So I certainly feel like, and we talk about in the book a little bit, that societal push to decide on what you want to do early really does disenfranchise a lot of people, especially given the fact that most of us are going to do many different jobs for our career, but we're pushed so early to think that we'll just do one. And that's just a real fallacy in terms of how things actually work.
Well, let me give you a couple of scenarios. So let's say that you have a teenager that, you know, that is, you know, really great and you know, really involved socially in the school, you know, but just didn't really get the greatest grades, and they didn't really know exactly what they want to do. So now they're in a situation to where, you know, they're starting to get a little closer to what it is that they want to do, but they're going, okay, now I can't go to a major university because I didn't get the grades that I needed to get accepted. If they're having to make that decision now, they're, you know, they've already turned 18, or they're already in, let's say, a, you know, a community college or something, what's the best way if they're going, you know, now I know what I want to do, I want to go to this university and I want to go into a particular field, you know, how do they sort of start over, or how do they rebuild those blocks to show them that they really are the type of student that would be good at this profession?
Well, Alan, I think there are a couple of things to respond to in the scenario you described. One is the, I guess, assumption that is a very common one, that there's kind of one pathway to get to where I want to go. Now, there are some careers for which that clearly is the case. So if I want to be a brain surgeon, you know, I'm going to have to early on build the kind of record that's going to get me into a medical school that offers that. It's very, very difficult. That's not the case for every profession. Now, there clearly are advantages for getting into a good college and that kind of thing, but I would start by testing that assumption that a team might have by saying, hey, talk to some people who are doing the kind of work that you feel called to do. How did they get there? And, you know, what with their colleagues, what different paths did people take to ending up, you know, where they are? Mm-hmm. Now, that may reinforce that there's, you know, they really need to kind of circle the wagons and bring their GPA up and so forth. But it may suggest, hey, there is not one right way or one clear way to do this. There are other approaches, other pathways that are possible. And that can be liberating for a teen. Now, if they do have a pretty narrow focus and the reality doesn't match up with what they hope to do, so, you know, use the brain surgeon as an example. You know, if there's a kid who wants to be a brain surgeon, but they're just really unlikely to be successful because of you know, their habits as a student or ability level or whatever, I think it's useful to take a step back and say, well, what is it about being a brain surgeon that really is exciting to you? You know, is it you know, from a movie or from, you know, watching the ER show or, you know, type shows, or is it something about helping people who have an ailment and you know, solving problems and using technology to put them on a path toward wellness? You know, if kind of understanding what the themes are behind that, because there are a lot of other pathways to achieving those goals than just kind of the one at the very top of the pyramid, right? Mm-hmm. So someone could pursue a career elsewhere in healthcare and achieve that same type of satisfaction that they think, you know, they'd need to be a brain surgeon to achieve, if that makes sense. So I think there's a lot of exploration and testing of assumptions that needs to happen. You know, with these kinds of decisions, there's no such thing as too much information, I guess, in terms of talking with people and kind of figuring out what kinds of possibilities are out there that can still provide the kind of life-giving approach to work and, you know, result in the same kind of satisfaction.
Okay. Now, go ahead. You wanted to add something?
No, good.
No, I'm good.
Oh, gotcha. Now, you mentioned earlier just about some of the different approaches, and while you were saying that, I was thinking, now, what about the concept of like a part-time job? So if you have somebody in, I mean, you're using brain surgeon, but it's something a little bit larger, but, you know, they want to go to a particular or get into a particular career. Can that be something to where they went, okay, you know what, I didn't get the grades, but maybe I can go in and try and get a part-time job there, and I can show them, you know, how valuable I am in that situation. I mean, is that the type of thing that will maybe help develop a team's future as a worker?
I think so. I mean, you know, the question about having poor grades, now what do I do? There is, and I provide, you know, we went down one path with that, but there are also, it's important to recognize that there are other opportunities to sort of do better, right? So mm-hmm. even with our graduate program in psychology, you know, where we get a lot of applicants and we have a very high bar for accepting people, there are some students or some applicants we get who kind of party their way through college and have an abysmal GPA and who we'd never even want to look at, but they've since, you know, found some opportunities to accomplish some things, and maybe they've gone and done another degree and demonstrated that, you know, life circumstances change, they were able to be more successful, and that to us is a more accurate you know, reading of that person's ability. So that's one thing. But the question about part-time jobs for a team mm-hmm. is a really good one, because the vast majority of teens hold a job at some point during high school, right? And an early job provides a really good firsthand look into what employment is like, and so can be really beneficial in terms of helping shape work habits and attitudes and interests. Even really horrible jobs that teens often get stuck with. I mean, when I was a teen, I worked in the dish room somewhere. I detasseled corn in the cornfields. I mean, these were horrible. But they helped me think through what I want to do one day, in addition to kind of, you know, learning things like punctuality and responsibility and that kind of thing. So kind of as a general rule, part-time work can be really helpful for teens, although, you know, it all sort of depends, because there's also some evidence that suggests that working too much, if it becomes a disruptor of school performance, can end up being hurtful.
Okay. Now, and I would also think that, you know, it could also help you just from the standpoint of getting a work ethic, you know, where you have set yourself up, you now understand, you know, what a work ethic is. And at the same time, and I guess I could speak a little bit from personal experience, I think you can also figure out what it is you don't want to do. I mean,
that's right.
You can get motivated quite a bit to pursue the dream that you want, realizing that whatever this part-time job is not really satisfying you in the manner that you'd like to see, or that you can't see yourself doing this for the next 40 years.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was thinking of Brian's examples of what he worked in high school, and my summer after my senior year of high school, before I went to college, I worked at a Firestone as like a sales guy. And this was the year, the summer that all those tires were blowing out for Firestone. And so there was all these big like lawsuits going on. Mm-hmm. And it was a real blue collar job, you know? And I honestly feel like what I took from that job was not just, I don't want to be doing this, because that certainly was the case, but that when I actually went to college, I worked my butt off. Because I really now had a sense of what my work might look like if I didn't do well in college potentially, and didn't have the opportunities to pursue some of those more upper middle class type jobs like a college professor. And that was a real motivator for me at that time. So I remember it wasn't just learning what I didn't like, it was kind of learning what I needed to do and what I needed to achieve to get to the spot that I wanted to, and that was doing well in college.
Absolutely. Now, we're going to take a break. I want everybody to stay with us. We will continue. We're going to be talking about our future. We're going to be talking about careers, and we're going to do a little commercial. And if we were going to pursue Firestone as a commercial advertiser, I don't think they're going to go for it, so we're going to have to get the one from Westshield. So we will see. We'll be back in about a minute and 10 seconds.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We are talking about careers. We are talking about making your job a calling. And we have an instant message that is coming through right now that is directed towards both of our guests, Brian Dick and Ryan Duffy. This one reads, "My stepdaughter, who is in her mid-30s, is headed back to college. This will be her third degree. The first two, psychology and business marketing, just did not, and this is in quotes, work out for her. Only months after she started working in those fields, she quit and stated that it was not what she wanted to do. Now she is pursuing architectural design. Her father stated that he would fully support her as long as she was in college." And this person says, this is obviously a huge mistake. It says, "I believe the latest endeavor results from a fear of working or living and on her own. It says, I would love to have your guest's view on this situation."
Yeah, that's a unique situation. I would say your listener might be onto something when he or she raised the question that there might be some kind of more deep-seated fears underlying the difficulty that the friend might be having in kind of sticking with something. She seems to be engaged in the trial and error approach where you just kind of, and it sounds like she's with family support, has the luxury of doing this. She's kind of going down different roads and seeing how it works. I would have a couple of questions. One is, you know, did this person engage in a period of exploration to get to the point where she really understood, you know, business psychology or architecture as pathways that are in alignment with her gifts, right, her interests and values and personality? If that's the case and there seemed to be a good fit there, then there's probably something more going on that creates roadblocks for her trying to get the job, the lifestyle, independence, and so forth to stick, right?
Right.
If it's a simpler matter of just kind of trying something out without fully reflecting on if it would work well or not, and then getting locked in, and then figuring out late in the game, wow, this is a lousy fit. Well, then it's not too late to take a step back and approach it differently this time.
Right.
But the limited information we have, and maybe Ryan can add to this, I'd say, with this particular individual, it might be that there is some fear of independence and so forth happening.
And I'd like to add just one other piece to this. This is something that Brian and I talk a lot about in the book. That's actually its own chapter. Is that I think, not to say she's an example, but certainly a lot of people are. Sometimes the best way to find and live out your calling is to do it in something that's not paid employment. And so a lot of times when we're dealing with people who feel a calling, but to something that's either impossible or really difficult to make a living out of, one of the things that we often will have people think about is, okay, is there a job that I can do that can kind of meet my survival and money needs, but maybe I can also meet my calling needs in something that's not my paid employment. Now, I don't think that's the ideal situation for a lot of people, but sometimes when you have a calling that really is not a money-making proposition, it's good to think about that possibility as doing it outside of paid employment.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And in this situation, you know, where it says, you know, that, you know, the father has stated that he would fully support as long as she was in college, it may be that in this situation, after the first two degrees, when she comes back and says, well, you know, I now want to get into architectural design, it may be, you know what, why don't you go intern somewhere at an architectural design company and see if you're going to like it before we go through four more years of school, see if it's something that you're going to like and if there's going to be a job there for you. And if you go there and intern for X amount of time and you still want to do that, then maybe we'll talk about the, you know, the 4 years of college. So,
yeah, I think that's what I was getting at with exploration. And I, you know, to give this person a little bit of credit, you know, if I had a situation where my family was supporting me as long as I was in college, I'd probably be on my 10th degree right now. some people just love learning, right? So.
All right. Well, now let's talk a little bit about how all of this fits in today's economy. I mean, is it reasonable to think that a calling is achievable with so many people that are barely getting by, or there's, you know, so few jobs out there and so many people looking for them? You know, I mean, how, you know, what's the realistic part of this?
That's a great question, and it's really a poignant one right now for a lot of people. You know, if your idea of pursuing a calling means choose whatever job you want, kind of your ideal scenario, and then just pursue it and expect it to fall in your lap, you're going to have a lot of disappointment. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons why we wrote this book was to say, look, there are ways that people can engage their current job as a calling, even if it's not the job that they would have chosen, but it's something they just took because they needed some income, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, a calling is not an event. It's not a choice. That's part of it, but it's really an ongoing lifestyle of approaching, you know, your job, the work that you do in a way that cultivates meaning, and that is focused on, you know, what it contributes to society around you, right? Now, that does sound a little Pollyanna, but we come across lots of examples of people, like the road construction flagger as one, who in kind of surprising places find ways to link what they're doing to something with, you know, to something that matters. And that's really key.
Right. Yeah, and I can relate to that just from the standpoint, I mean, when people ask me, I mean, I consider what I've been allowed to do as a blessing. I mean, it is truly a blessing to be able to do something where you can make a difference in the lives of others and have still figured out a way to get paid for it. I mean, it's just,
absolutely.
You know, so you know, I can see where I was able to make some of those decisions in an early age. But how can we as parents, what can we do to help our children sort of develop that same sense of calling, or at the same time be there for them if they're going for a sense of calling and it just realistically isn't open to them right now?
Well, I would say two things on that, and I'm sure, Brian, you'll have some follow-up to this, but I think, you know, so much of a calling is about having it be something that's really highly meaningful and also something that's pro-social. So we've talked about that already. So I think as parents, your goal is to teach your children that work is a place where you can find meaning and a place where you can help others. And also model the idea that if you are approaching your work in a way that it's going to be a part of your meaning and a way that's going to help others, you yourself will be happier. So you yourself will reap the outcomes of approaching work in that manner. And so I think, Alan, like maybe with you as an example, you know, you are in a job where you are touching other people's lives. But I'm sure there's a lot of things you do with your job that are about helping others that you've chosen to do more of because you see its impact and you see how good it makes you feel by doing those things.
Absolutely.
Whereas you could do less and maybe not work as hard, but as a consequence, you wouldn't have that impact nor that really strong satisfaction that comes along with working in that fashion. So I think having children in their minds know that work is about meaning and helping others, I think is what we should teach those children.
I couldn't agree more. So let me get back to the book for a little bit. I'm checking the time right now. We've got about 10 more minutes. Now, one of the themes from the book, you know, is that a calling is an active process, not just a thing to be discovered. So tell us what you mean by that and the impact that it might have on teens as they think about their future careers.
I think, you know, when I was a teen, to some extent, and a lot of teens that I interact with now have this kind of view of finding a job as something that they, you know, will arrive at, kind of make a decision, have a revelation or something, and then ride off happily into the sunset. And anyone who's worked in a career knows that, you know, career choice is not where the process ends. That's really the beginning. And when we talk about calling as an active process, and a lot of the things that we've talked about, you know, kind of a pro-social approach to work where you're focused on how what you're doing helps people, and, you know, making meaning and so forth, that requires, I would say, even a daily practice of taking a step back and saying, how is what I'm doing today in my job, you know, linked to something that matters to me? How am I using my strengths? Who is benefiting from this? And how can I focus on that, on doing a better job, because what I'm doing matters? When people are able to do this, they're actually crafting the job. They're crafting the tasks of their job. They're crafting the boundaries of the relationships with their coworkers and the people they're interacting with. and they're reinforcing their way of thinking about the work they do. And when they're able to do that, and this is not just kind of us trying to be persuasive, there's research that supports this, it makes work more meaningful, right? We talked about the road construction flagger before. Another great example of this is hospital janitorial staff. There's a specific example of this in the book, but there's research with janitors who at hospitals who and the researchers found they could be divided into two groups. One who kind of punched in, punched out, and did what they needed to do and went home, and the others who thought about their work as a janitor in the hospital as part of the hospital's mission of helping people heal. And so, you know, those janitors would talk about their patients as their patients, as if they were part of the team delivering health care, which in a sense they were. So, you know, we look at that and we say, what can we learn from that in whatever job we're in? And what we can learn from is, I think, focusing on what, you know, whatever we're doing, how does it contribute somehow? And that might be direct. It might be indirect, but if we think about that and find more ways to kind of enhance that, then we're on the path to making our jobs a calling.
Yeah, and you know, as you were saying that, it reminded me, there's a retired janitor from the school system, and so he was a janitor at a high school for many, many years, and he is one of the most optimistic, one of the most positive people. Even though he's retired, he's got this great circle of friends and they do lots of things together. He's in his 70s. And when he talks about his time working in the school, and he had come from another profession, he said that he realized that that's what he should have been doing because of the fact that he was helping setting the stage for the next generation. You know, and I thought, you know, what a great attitude, you know, to have, you know, as you're working with, you know, with high school students, even though you are, quote, the janitor, that was not an issue with him. He was helping them in the same way that the teachers were, which I think was just a beautiful way to look at things.
That's right. And you talked before about personality and the role of personality, and that person probably has a bright, sunny disposition naturally. But we think that there are lessons that the rest of us can learn from folks like that, and that these things are malleable. I mean, there are things that people can do that they're not doing now to make their work a better fit for who they are, and you know, to kind of enhance that sense of meaning, to make it really matter. That's a lot of what we highlight in the book.
All right. Well, now, in again, going back to the day and age that we're living in now, I mean, you know, a couple of generations ago, I think most people came out of school, most men anyway, came out of school, found a profession, and that's where they felt they were going to be for the next 30, 40, 50 years or until they retired. But now we hear about people changing jobs, I mean, you know, every, you know, on a monthly basis sometimes. I mean, there are people that have now changed their careers, you know, 10 times, you know. And so with that said, and based on the way that the world is today, how should teens prepare to cope with this kind of, quote, brave new world out there for them?
You know, Alan, one of the things that from a literature background in terms of where we come from, one of the big terms that is studied a lot now is adaptability. And I think that's what it's about. It's about teaching people the ability to adapt, because that is what we're all going to have to do. I think previously, like you said, back in the old days, there was the important thing to teach people was to make the best decision, because you were going to make one decision and that's going to be it. But now that's not the case, and so the most important thing to teach people is the skills to be able to adapt to any type of work environment to make that job something that's meaningful to you. And so I think for us, I think that's kind of the big term in terms of teaching teens.
Well, makes good sense. And we've got another this is an email that's coming across that is directed to you. It says, we have a number of teachers at our school who are incredibly unhappy with their jobs. It's as they moan constantly that they are overworked and underpaid. The fact is, I teach 2 more classes and coach the girls' volleyball team. I truly love my work and have adequate time for all of it, as well as my family. I have suggested to these teachers that moan so much that they should find a new career if teaching is too much for them. And it says, you can imagine how that went over. Would your book be appropriate as a Christmas or start the new year gift to give to some of these people to try to give them a new perspective?
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, if someone, the challenge there is if there are people who are focused on what is in it for me, they're focused on the extrinsic reward. Right? What am I being paid? Am I being adequately rewarded? That's a challenge, you know, and it's almost like it's difficult to kind of change people's minds when that's the goal. I think what we've tried to do with the book is to say, you know, take a step back. What was it about teaching that drew you to it in the first place? Mm-hmm. You know, if it was for the salary, then you probably, you know, were going down the wrong path at the outset. Instead, it was probably something about taking young people who desperately need to learn well, to have mentors, to have people they could turn to, you know, to know how to live life, and investing in them. And there's a reward there that I would say, at least with the emailer there who is experiencing this, that far exceeds a tangible reward. You know, that's not to say that we don't all have to put food on the table and so forth. But at the end of the day, you know, that sort of deathbed scenario, when you look back on things, you know, what is it that you're remembering? You know, is it your tax returns or is it the lives that you touched? And that's hopefully our book focuses people again on those kinds of things.
Well, yes. And I would hope that with these being, they're referring to teachers. I think the other aspect that these teachers need to recognize is that this is what the kids are seeing. If the kids are seeing them teach, but yet not really teaching with a sense of emotion and a sense of joy in what it is that they're doing, they're really affecting a lot of other kids that maybe these teachers should be looking for a new career, something that's going to charge them up, maybe the same way they were charged up when they first decided to go into this career.
That's right. I totally agree with you.
So, gentlemen, I cannot believe that we are out of time. But again, thank you so much. And again, for everybody out there listening, the book is called "Make Your Job a Calling: How the Psychology of Vocation Can Change Your Life at Work." And to get more information on it, you can go to www.makeyourjobacalling.com. Brian and Ryan. You guys need to start your own show and call it the Brian and Ryan Show. So, anyway, thank you so much. Thank you so much for coming on, and you know, just keep up the good work.
Likewise, Alan. Keep up the good work too. Yep, it was great to join you.
All right, thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox, right here on LA Talk Radio.